This episode of Neighbors is brought to you by Yazoo Brewing Company, a Southern original since 2003. They're makers of beer like Yazoo Pale Ale, Gerst, and Sly Rye Porter. For being a listener of Neighbors, you will get a free pint glass shipped to your home when you enter in the promo code NEIGHBORS, along with your purchase of merchandise from yazoobrew.com. Yazoo is a proud supporter of all Neighbors everywhere, sharing stories over a pint. Joy and sorrow. They both hold a prominent place in a book of poetry called The Prophet by Khalil Gibran. The book is a string of poems that tells one cohesive story about a man. Picture him as a wild man with crazy gray hair. He lives in a city far away from his home. He's been there for the past 12 years, waiting for a ship to come and take him back. One day he climbs a hill and he sees a ship coming. It is the ship. It's finally come to take him back home. He's filled with joy, but he looks back at the town that's been his home for so long, and he feels sad. Even though his time there was full of pain and longing, he's sad to see it go. Before he gets on the ship, everyone in the city gathers at the gates. They ask the man to share his wisdom with them. They see him as a prophet. They ask him big questions about love and work and marriage. After a while, one woman says, "Speak to us of joy and sorrow." The crowd hushed, and he said,
"Your joy is your sorrow unmasked. And the selfsame well from which your laughter rises was oftentimes filled with your tears. And how else can it be? The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. Is not the cup that holds your wine the very cup that was burned in the potter's oven? And is not the lute that soothes your spirit the very wood that was hollowed with knives?
Maybe joy and sorrow are two sides to the same coin. Perhaps the awful things that happen to us can eventually equip us to connect with others. I'm Jacob Lewis, and you're listening to Neighbors, the show where next door hits home, telling surprising stories of ordinary people. Today's episode is called
The Fool:
How Tragedy Carves Capacity.
Jacob? Not much. How are you?
This is Lindsay. Her and I used to work together at Trader Joe's, actually. She's in Morocco now, so I called her using the internet. I wanted her to tell me about the time I first met her friend, Colin.
Well, I'm just remembering when we went over to your house that time for dinner. Different people were asking him what he does, and it took him a really long time to say actually what he does, because he was kind of like, yeah, you know, I play music, and everyone in Nashville is like, oh, you're a musician. He's like, not really, you know, I play for kids. I play for homeless people. And then like, it kind of like, we had to like drag it out of him that in fact he was a clown. I think that the word is just like, it's a really loaded word. Everyone has their idea of a clown. I think it's really different from what he is and like the type of clown that he is.
All right, you're going to have to scoot really close. We'll be up in each other's grills.
I'm cool with it, man. This is intimate, leaning against the bed and just like, welcome to my home.
So this is Colin. He's not in Morocco or Nashville. I actually went to his house in St. Louis to talk to him. He's 21, he has a broad baby face, he plays the banjo. He's a very unassuming guy.
I don't know why it feels like a confession when I say, like, I'm a clown.
But Colin isn't your typical bozo or Ronald McDonald.
I've never done a birthday party, I don't know how to do balloon animals or ride a unicycle.
That's because Colin is a very specific type of clown. He's a clown doctor at the St. Louis Children's Hospital. a hospital clown. He goes in the rooms of sick and dying children and clowns for them. So when Colin was over at my house for dinner, the first question we all asked was, how do you become a clown doctor? Well, Colin was a rambunctious kid in school. A teacher suggested drama, so Colin became a drama kid, really latched onto it. So one day his dad, who's a doctor, tells him about these clowning trips that he had heard about, where you could sign up and go clown in another country for people living in poverty. The whole thing is called humanitarian clowning. So not only would it be an adventure, but he would learn how to clown. He signs up and goes to Peru. He clowns for the sick, the elderly, orphans. Here's Colin playing mandolin with some other musicians. A dozen clowns dance around, putting on a show for Peruvian kids.
So I ended up kind of being introduced to it and realizing it was something I'd been doing my whole life but didn't really have a name for it, which was just that trying to bridge the gap with humor and playing the fool and being the clown as a means of connection and a means of celebration and enjoying the present moment. I ended up meeting some clowns who were in with the Gesundheit Institute, which is the institute that was founded by Patch Adams.
Now, if that name is ringing a bell, it might be because of the movie starring Robin Williams. It's simply called Patch Adams. Now, I realize I have to explain this movie because I thought everybody had seen it, but I was wrong. Bailey, my production assistant, is 23. She's never seen it. And even more surprising, my own wife.
Okay. You've never seen Patch Adams?
No.
This is my lovely wife, Catherine. I'm going to tell you what this movie is about by telling you what my wife thinks it's about.
Patch Adams is about a doctor who is taking care of people in, I want to say, third world country or somewhere really rural, maybe an island. Then he dies. Does he die?
No.
Oh. So the movie's about Hunter Adams, who goes by the name Patch, played by Robin Williams. At the beginning of the movie, Patch is suicidal and commits himself to a psych hospital. Inside, he starts to get better when he turns his attention toward helping his fellow patients. Because helping others was healing for him, he decides to enroll in medical school. But when he gets there, he is turned off by how the medical system works. Here's a scene from the movie where Patch is doing his residency and making the rounds with a group of students led by another doctor. They come to a woman lying on a hospital bed, and the doctor asks the group,
questions? Any osteomyelitis?
None apparent, although not definitive.
Treatment?
To stabilize the blood sugar. Consider antibiotics, possibly amputation.
What's her name?
The group goes silent and parts to reveal Patch in the bath.
I was just wondering the patient's name.
The doctor begrudgingly looks at his chart.
Marjorie. Hi, Marjorie.
Hi.
Yes, thank you. Let's move on.
Now, Patch goes on to open up his own clinic with the help of a wealthy friend. At his clinic, they focus on all the needs of a patient, not just colds and cancer. Now, there is a Hollywood twist at the end that does involve death, but it's not Patch.
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what I said.
He's not in a third world country. He's not on an island. He does not die.
Yeah, but he heals them with kindness and comedy.
So the real Patch Adams actually did found the Gesundheit Institute. Its goal is to reframe the traditional idea of a hospital to one that's more holistic. They don't accept insurance because they don't charge anything. The initial patient interview is 3 to 4 hours long. All complementary medicines are accepted, like clowning, which just so happens to be what Patch Adams is doing in Peru while Colin is playing the mandolin. Patch is dressed up like a giant sperm, clowning to teach Peruvian children about contraception.
Patch is the weirdest and happiest man I ever met in my entire life. He's in the best way possible, I consider this high praise, but he is a social criminal. He just, like, the social red tape I was referring to, he just doesn't see it. And he's just a radical in a wonderful way, where he wants to start a love revolution and a war on indifference and apathy, and it's very romantic. And so I kind of got swept into that romance.
So Colin clowns for a week in Peru, and then heads back home to Virginia. He's full of vigor and passion. A few months go by, and then something really awful happens. One day his mom, Laura, says she wants to talk to him.
She told me she was sick last January. They weren't positive until it had spread a little more, and I'm forgetting the technical term for it. It's a kind of cancer, but it wasn't, you know, they couldn't say ovarian or breast or brain, heart, you know, lung.
Laura starts treatment. The family tries to stay positive. Several months go by until it's time for Colin to go back to Peru. He really wants to go, but he's not sure if he should, given his mom's condition. After he spends some quality time with her, she encourages him to go and clown on this trip. So he goes down to Peru, and he's hanging out with some friends one morning when someone tells him that Robin Williams is dead.
When he found out, was in a hotel room in Peru and was sitting on the bed and had a couple of my clown brothers comforting me like my dog had just died or something. Not like, you know what I mean, but it was like I took it personally. Well, I think everyone felt sad for this reason. Someone who gives off so much light can contain a darkness, like, you know. And that's just really scary to think about and to know that it's true, and we have to acknowledge that. And yeah, and then we went to this bar that's like on the Amazon River. It's this rickety place where the wind blows and there's no windows. And so yeah, we're just looking at the Amazon River and it was getting really late, and we're talking about Robin, we were talking about my mother, and we were talking about clowning. And
Colin says that Patch got up and spoke to the room.
So yeah, Patch kind of expressed to us that we all owed him a thank you for what he, in part for what he did.
Being in a room full of people processing the death of another human being made Colin present to death in a way that he had been slightly detached from. He was confronted with that reality in his own life. His mom had cancer. It didn't look good. She was probably going to die.
I was talking with Patch about going home and taking care of her, and I was worried about it because I wanted to do a good job and I wanted to, you know. And he told me to just go clown. He said, just do what you're doing here. But instead of for his community of children and old folks and everyone in between, it's for one person. You just clown. And it was sound advice.
Colin went home to where his mother was in the hospital. He literally clowned for her, but also figuratively. He played the banjo and was just present to her.
And again, it wasn't always about humor. It was about humor as much as possible, but then also about listening. But the irony of listening to someone who's passing away is that you think you're kind of getting the last tastes of who you knew, but it's a different person. I mean, when you hear a diagnosis, it's kind of, you're like an extract of yourself. It's just a more concentrated version of your personality, if that makes sense. It just trims the fat. And the old you is kind of unreachable, where it was like she was more herself than ever, if that makes sense. So it was amazing. I just got to know her so well.
As the weeks go on, Colin's mom starts to go downhill. She starts to sleep for long periods of time. Days. And one day, everyone agrees to show up at the hospital at the same time. Laura's asleep.
And once we were all there, she let go. And my mother, it would read like fiction, but she passed away on Christmas Day. And I left the hospital, and I was like, I'm never stepping in another hospital ever again. Ever.
So that's when Colin moved to St. Louis. A family friend offers him free rent in her house to give him time to figure out what's next. He takes it and starts volunteering at a place called Queens for Peace. They help women who are recovering from addiction and their families. Part of that volunteering time
is spent at a daycare.
And a woman who is in charge of that daycare told me about this job at the hospital. She was like, yeah, I read that and I only know one clown. And so I'm telling you, it just kind of seemed like it couldn't possibly be a coincidence that they hadn't had a vacancy in 15 years. They hired 5 clowns and then a few of them left this past year. And then they put the ad up, and then 2 weeks later, I was in there with them. So they were also like, yeah, you're supposed to have this job.
So the guy who vowed never to go in a hospital again is now working at one.
Hello, I am Dr. Kooky McMoonstar. I am your doctor. I'm here to help.
He sometimes goes on rounds with doctors to check on the patients.
One of them referred to me as Mr. Kooky, and I said, that's Dr. Kooky. I did not spend 4 years at Clown Medical School to be called Mr. And not one doctor laughed. They did not think it was funny. And so the kid thought it was funny.
Even though Colin isn't a real doctor, he does wear a doctor's coat. This is to help disassociate the white coat from scary doctors that give kids shots. He also wears a little face paint to exaggerate his facial expressions. And he wears a big red nose.
It's like it's a mask. It's the smallest mask that there is because it doesn't cover much of your face, but it is a mask. So it's a small mask, but the idea of the clown nose is you put on a mask to take one off. You show your inner self, and it affects your emotional state, and I don't know what it is, but you come in the room and you just make solid eye contact and you just reach out and just love them. It's really pretty simple. You just love them, I guess. It's an excellent medicine for any sort of brokenness, it's clowning, and I suppose the idea is to, you know, give a medicine. That's kind of why I was employed. But I don't know, when you're really doing it right, it's an exchange of medicine and everyone's healing, you know. And it's not just, I'm here because I'm going to help you. It's like, I'm here because we're all going to feel a little better.
Do you have, so I'm curious, is that like, you just riffing?
Neighbors is produced by me, Jacob Lewis, with production help from Bailey Robbins. This episode was edited by Rob McGinley Myers and Tally Abacasis. Special thanks to Colin for playing the banjo for us, and to Jeff Durham for playing the part of the prophet. If you like the show, rate or review us in iTunes. It goes a long way. This episode of Neighbors is brought to you by Baja Burrito, doing it the hard way since Y2K. Located in the Berry Hill neighborhood of Nashville, Tennessee, these are seriously good burritos. Neighbors is a proud founding member of The Herd, an audio collective of 8 sound-rich, story-driven shows. One of them is Nocturne by Vanessa Lowe. It's a show that uncovers hidden aspects of the night, like in this upcoming episode.
There was no trepidation. There was no hesitation. It was this sort of march toward the ocean. But they're running. You know, they're running to the sea. They're running to go home, and they're so brave because the waves are so big. And I know there are sharks out there waiting to eat them, and all kinds of other hazards. But there they go.
You can find out more about all The Herd shows at theherdradio.com. That's H-E-A-R-D. Well, I'm Jacob Lewis, and I'm reminding you to get to know your neighbors.